Welcome! You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is a syndicated show. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
I think it's incumbent on us. It's important for us to understand that there's far more similarities, increasingly, in ongoing struggles around the world. But most of these struggles have to do with the relentless push for economic expansion and resource extraction and opening new markets. And at the same time, the devastating impact on the environment, on water sources, on clean air, and then on the well-being of local populations.
That's the voice of Graham Russell from Rights Action. On this week's show, we speak to Graham Russell about the recent elections in Honduras and how the U.S. and Canadian governments are supporting the corrupt coup government in Honduras and what we as citizens can do about it. Stay tuned.
I'm very privileged this evening to have with us Graham Russell. Graham Russell is the co-founder of Rights Action. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me on, Sylvia.
Now, Graham, it has been over 4 years since the military coup removed the elected president Manuel Zelaya in Honduras. And since then, the Honduran people have been under siege. Can you describe the recent elections?
Unfortunately, yes. What some are referring to the recent elections in Honduras that took place on November 24th, so just a couple of weeks ago, is sort of the continuation of the coup. The military coup against the government of Zelaya took place in June of 2009. The country became extremely violent and repressive soon after that. There were fraudulent and violent elections in November of 2009 as an attempt to sort of legitimize the coup. But no one, except for the governments of Canada and the U.S., no one accepted the legitimacy of the election in November 2009. Then followed 4 years where the levels of repression in Honduras returned to the same levels of repression that were being committed in Honduras in the 1980s by U.S.-backed military regimes, and that was all during the so-called Cold War. And also at the same time, over the last 4 years, the levels of violence, like the murder rates in Honduras, spiked, and it's become known as the murder capital of the world. The levels of violence have been that high. And despite all of that repression and violence, a new opposition party was formed called Libre, the Party for Liberty and Refoundation. And it grew out of opposition to the military coup. Libre itself was founded in 2012, was targeted for repression. Some 20 people linked to the Libre Party were killed. And even then, it was by far the most popular party in the country. And all of this built through to this year, 2013, to these elections on November the 24th. And they were, I think, quite blatantly stolen by fraud and repression by one of the dominant parties, the National Party.
It's important to remember that in 2009, most people in Honduras boycotted the so-called fraudulent elections that, you know, sought to legitimize the coup government. Today, you know, in 2013, we see a replay of that coup. I wonder if you could talk briefly about the difference in terms of the platforms of both parties. On one hand, we have a people that have been under siege with militarized officials on the streets, militarized streets and violence, as you've described. But what did Libre offer that was different from the other parties?
It did not set out a clear platform on every aspect of life, but whether it's health reform, educational reform, land ownership reform, economic reform. One of the main things that it clearly set out was that it was going to open up a constitutional reform process, and they were going to establish a national constituent assembly and invite all sectors of society to participate in a public sort of empowering process to, so that all sectors of society could decide what type of constitutional reforms they wanted in their country, including issues related to land tenure, race, gender, the economic order, etc. And now that's not going to happen. So that they didn't set out a crystal clear platform on all aspects of life, as I said. On the other hand, the government of the Nationalist Party is very much going to continue what are loosely referred to as neoliberal economic policies. They are very clearly opening up, continuing to open up the country to the investment of foreign companies and foreign investors. And most particularly, this is going to unfortunately benefit Canadian and American companies and investors who had already been sort of increasing their economic activity in Honduras over the past 4 years. The incoming president, Juan Orlando Hernandez, has said very clearly that he's going to continue with that policy of favoring the corporate and investor interests of international investors and companies. And that, in my view, is completely to the detriment of the needs of the Honduran people.
You know, when we think about Honduras, it is now acknowledged that Honduras' democracy was stolen by a military coup in June 2009. Their elections were stolen by repression and fraud in November 2009. And now again, as you have pointed out, these elections are mired in fraud and repression. I wonder if we could talk a little bit about the significance that Honduras holds for the world, because whether it is the dirty wars of the 80s or whether it is, the kind of military reign of terror under Pinochet, Latin America has had a way of mapping these wounds. And they're not just wounds for the people there, but I think they also set a kind of blueprint, you know, for how the new liberal project is being advanced. And by new liberalism, I mean the constant encroachment on public asset, the privatization of, you know, everything. So I wonder if you could comment on what this signals for the world and why the world should care about what happens in Honduras.
The world, and more particularly the Western Hemisphere, they should care about Honduras the way we care about sort of anywhere in the world, just in general terms. And here is a country that is in the Latin American context has the highest levels of poverty, repression, and violence. So it's very much just in straight sort of moral, ethical terms, it should be of great concern to anyone who cares about human rights issues. But then further than that, what is of real concern is what are the policy decisions and the actions of the governments of countries like Canada and the United States. What are we actively doing in Honduras, either to put ourselves on the side of the impoverished majority and put ourselves on the side of human rights, or are our governments actually putting themselves on the side of the repressive regime? And that's, simplistically put, that's what is happening with respect to the governments of Canada and the United States. We are prioritizing our own economic interests and putting ourselves on the side of a very repressive regime. That regime that favors the economic interests of Honduras, sort of small oligarchy and companies and investors from Canada and the United States. And so that's of enough concern right there in Canada and the United States. Furthermore, I think it's an indication of what Canada and the United States would prefer in Latin America. And so Honduras is, in that sense, is an example of ongoing struggles across Latin America. In some ways, Honduras is one of the worst-case scenarios, perhaps, along with countries like Haiti and Guatemala. It's one of the worst-case scenarios in terms of having very repressive, regressive governments in power. On the other end of the spectrum in Latin America, you have countries like Ecuador and Bolivia and Cuba and Venezuela, that are really trying to change the direction of their countries and have a much more positive role of government in their societies, and the role of government in fomenting and investing in the needs and the well-being of the general population. So across Latin America, you get this spectrum of sort of political experiments. And unfortunately, Canada and the United States continue, our governments and our companies continue to side themselves with the more regressive and repressive governments and regimes of Latin America. And that sends a very clear message to Latin America as to where Canada and the United States stand. And it also has devastating impact on the well-being of the people in countries like Honduras.
One of the things that I think today we face globally is the threat of climate change. And whether we look at, you know, the scarcity of water and access to potable water, for us in Central America, El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, mining has been a continuous threat to the, not just to the livelihoods of people, but to our survival in general. Can we talk about, you know, the significance that this encroachment on our democratic right to even participate in the election of our political parties signals for the companies that have most benefited from the kind of atrocities and impunity of this government?
Mining is perhaps the best way to understand what is clearly the role of the Canadian government and what direction our government is going in. Before the military coup in 2009, the government of President Zelaya had put a moratorium on handing out any more mining licenses. Now, President Zelaya's government was not engaged in any sort of radical reform, but they were acknowledging that there were some problems with mining. They grandfathered in the company Goldcorp Inc. that was already operating a huge cyanide leaching mine that was devastating to the environment, water sources, and health of the local population. But the government of Zelaya did put a moratorium on handing out any more licenses and said clearly that they need to reform their mining laws, firstly to consider implementing a complete ban on open pit cyanide leaching mine, and secondly, to really take a serious look at what kind of laws and regulatory framework do they need in place if they're even going to allow mining. Now, President Zelaya's government never got to implement those changes because they were ousted in a military coup. Over the past 4 years, there's two very clear decisions that the Canadian government took that signal where Canada is at. Firstly, Prime Minister Stephen Harper went to Honduras in 2011 with a delegation of politicians and business executives from Canada, including mining company executives, and signed a so-called free trade agreement with the military-backed regime of Honduras. That already was sort of a clear statement in favor of global investors and corporations and a clear statement against the interests or the needs of the Honduran majority. And then secondly, in 2012, Canada's so-called aid agency, CETA, funded the reform of Honduras's mining law. So the very mining law that President Zelaya wanted to reform to bring in more sort of stringent controls on mining, CETA funded a reform of the mining law that was close to a complete sellout in favor of the interests of mining companies and investors. So Canada was very clearly, both before the coup in 2009 and during the last 4 years of the military-backed regime, Canada was making a very clear statement that the policies we want to see implemented in Honduras are to favor the interests of Canadian resource extraction companies. And that is very likely what's going to happen. Going back years now, over 30% of Honduras' landmass, of the entire landmass of the country, has been concessioned out to mainly North American mining companies. Most of the companies have not been able to start operating their mines because there's been too many political problems in the country. But they are very seriously hoping that the government of Juan Orlando Hernandez can exert enough, basically, military control in the country so that the mining companies can start operating the mines again. And this will just be absolutely devastating to the environment in Honduras, let alone the needs of the majority of the population.
I think more importantly, it also signals a distancing, you know, an effective distancing of people from other people's pain. You know, when we see mining here in Canada, we think of the great resistance of First Nations people against, you know, the Enbridge pipeline, against the kind of exploitation of mining resources of the Taseko mines here in BC, that twice now the Supreme Court has denied the permit, and again now the local government is proposing some amendments, you know, to make this project go through. So I think not only do we learn from each other's resistance, but I think it's important to recognize that the more our voices connect, the more we ourselves become you know, united in our ability to defend not just the land, but our ability to survive, our right to clean air, to clean water, to a life without repression. How can
I think?
Go ahead.
Well, just very briefly, I think there are direct comparisons between what's happening in Honduras and Guatemala, or in Guatemala and Canada, or in Haiti and Canada. Now, there are some very serious differences. The levels of poverty in Canada are quite different, and that's not to belittle the very real poverty that there is in Canada, but the levels of poverty and exploitation in countries like Honduras, Guatemala, and Haiti is significantly higher. The levels of repression and violence in countries like Guatemala, Honduras, and Haiti is significantly higher. But the dynamic that's going on, the relentless role of the corporate sectors and the investor sectors to relentlessly exploit more and produce more and seek more mineral resources and seek more oil and gas resources, that is quite similar. And so I think it, even as we have to try and understand the differences and sort of perhaps prioritize certain struggles at a given moment because there's just so much repression and suffering, I think it's incumbent on us, it's important for us to understand that there's far more similarities increasingly in ongoing struggles around the world. But most of these struggles have to do with the relentless push for economic expansion and resource extraction and opening new markets, and at the same time the devastating impact on the environment, on water sources, on clean air, and then on the well-being of local populations.
Thank you so much for being with us today. How can people access or participate in the efforts of Rights Action and, you know, connect to the struggles taking place in Honduras?
I think the best thing is for both folks that are interested to understand more about how these economic and resource-based struggles are playing themselves out in Honduras and Guatemala is to get on Rights Action's listserv, and that's at rightsaction.org. Or follow us at Facebook. And that's the starting point, is just to start to receive and read this information on a regular basis, and then start to see the similarities and the connections between what's happening in places like Guatemala and Honduras and what's happening at home in Canada. And as I said earlier, while there are some serious differences as well, there's far more similarities than one would think. And so I think the best starting point is to get on our listserv or follow us on Facebook.
Thank you so much for being with us this evening, and thank you for all your work, giving visibility to the voices, to the multitudes that are standing for their rights and who are struggling every day, because the military coup in Honduras has now become a verb, you know, el golpismo, and people in Honduras understand that this is not something that happened one day, but rather is something that we are living with.
Yeah, very much so, and they have a very clear understanding of what are the powerful interests in favor of the coup, and their understanding is that the powerful interests in favor of the coup are not just the interests of the Honduran sort of economic elites and the Honduran military, but also the economic interests of certain sectors in Canada and the United States as well. And so they very much understand how Honduras economically fits into the very unjust global economic order, and that part of their struggle, part of the struggle to bring about serious reform and change in Honduras has to take place in both Canada and the United States as well.
Thank you again for being with us.
Thank you very much. We'll keep in touch.
Take care.
In parting, I'm going to play a song by Dana Lyons called Drop of Water. So long for now.
There's a drop of water on the wall, and the drop's about to fall, and it falls into a trickle, and the trickle's flowing down, down, down to the ground, and the moss begins to grow. Watch, 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 watch the water flow, and watch the current become a stream. Busting through the seams, cracking through the concrete, bending down the steel, in a raging that is real, a tearing torrent you can feel. Feel the thunder growing, thunder underground, and in my heart, the chains falling apart, the wildness in my soul. And for once in life, for once in life, I know I'm not alone. For the mountains make our bones, with the oceans in our blood, our feet planted, planted firmly in the mud. We are alive, the burning embers in our eyes, the tingling touch upon our skin. And in the heat of passion, we begin to understand that we are of this land, that we are part of Earth, and when it's threatened, we will fight for all we're worth. We watch the dam come crashing down, water rushing to the sea. And now the river, now the river, now the river, now is free. Drops about to fall, and it falls into a trickle, and the trickle's flowing down, down, down to the ground, and the moss begins to grow. Watch, 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 watch the water flow, and watch the current become a stream, busting through the seams, cracking through the concrete, bending down the steel, in a raging that is real, a tearing torrent you can feel. Feel the thunder growing, thunder underground, and in my heart, the chains falling apart, water rushing to the sea. And now the river, now the river, now the river, now is free.
come to the end of our program. Latin Waves is a weekly syndicated program available to campus and community radios. Please visit our website, www.latinwavesmedia.com, to hear previous shows, connect to our media projects, and access other resources, or to support our efforts by making a safe PayPal contribution. I am Sylvia Richardson. Thanks for listening.